Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, welcome back after all that. Nice to have you with us every day, especially today. Those of you that were attending the Fishers Forum would know that one of the things that came up during those conversations were the code of conduct and ethics. Did you know that the council had a whole program prepared to discuss exactly that? It's called the Fisherman's Code of Conduct. And to help us parse through it and maybe redefine it, there's a neat pamphlet which we're going to tell you how to get. But it's all about sharing, and we're going to share this time with two friends from the council joining us today, and they're going to wear different hats than normal. One is Charlie Ka'ai'ai. He's been here recently. He's the Indigenous Coordinator for the council. Aloha, Charlie. Nice to see you again.
Aloha, Mike.
And also Craig Severance. We haven't talked to Craig for a while because he's a neighbor islander brought in specially for this meeting today. And he is, in addition to many things that he does, he's on the council's Scientific and Statistical Committee. And a big supporter of the council, and of course a big player on the Big Island. Hi, Craig. Nice to see you again.
Aloha, Mike. Aloha
to you. Be back. You know, we have had a lot of stories in the news, Charlie. And since you're the Indigenous coordinator, we've had some things that are somewhat less than pleasant. I mean, there's been some real confrontations between fishermen, and there's all kinds of things that we're going to be talking about that. But it seems like, if they'd have been Pono and looking at this code of conduct, they would have been okay with this. We need to address that, right? I mean, is it just so many of us? Is that the deal?
You know, I think there's a lot of conflicts that arise out of, you know, I think one of the ways that you deal with the conflict is you talk to each other, right? Before it rises to the level of conflict. And this code of conduct kind of gives you a general way that we would expect people to behave when they're fishing. And if everybody can agree to a code of conduct, I think we can address a lot of the kind of conflicts that are arising.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Craig, because since we haven't seen each other for a while, but you're the Big Island, we had that definite confrontation between a aquarium fisherman and some environmental people. Probably could have been avoided, and it turned, you know, kind of borderline ugly. So it is important to look at these things.
It's very important to look at these things, and it's also important for people to kind of respect each other and get to understand each other instead of just relying on the stereotypes they hear about different kinds of people and the ways different kinds of people fish.
Well, one thing I can tell you that I became familiar with, and this may be interesting from your statistical gathering hat for a minute, and that is garbage in, garbage out. If we don't tell the truth about the surveys, and Charlie and I have discussed this before, that if somebody wants to know how many mullet you catch or how many more you catch or what you do or what you tag, if you tell them bogus comes out, and you may end up with a regulation or some sort of a limit or restriction that you probably wouldn't get if you told the truth.
That's very true.
Isn't that funny?
That's funny. Mm-hmm. And it comes about in these stock assessments when we have underreporting. So the beginning biomass that is estimated to be reduced by any controls or regulations, that if that biomass is smaller because people aren't fully reporting, then the quota's going to be smaller.
Yeah, Charlie, you know, we talked about that. If a guy says, I catch 3 ahi a year and he really catches 18, he's going to be quoted with 3.
Yeah.
And if you told 18, he might have been able to get 9 or something.
Right,
you know, something.
Right.
But you see, what I want to do today, and I know that it may sound sophomoric to both of you and to me, because I know these 9 codes. I think we should go through them and maybe sort of look how they interrelate with each other. And the first comes it right up your coleana, Charlie, and that's respecting nature.
Respect nature and your place in it. That's real important. It also makes it your responsibility to learn something about it, you know. These codes of conduct came out of when we did the Ahamoku initiative, and part of that traditional way of doing it was to have a code of conduct. And it's really, you know, the old way was, oh, that's not how we do it here. Mm-hmm. This is what we do here. It's kind of a code of conduct. It's the way that you you deal with being out in nature. And I think,
but see, that was kind of passed along, though. That was kind of passed down from generation to generation, and it still is.
It still
now
is.
Now look at how interesting it is, because we're looking at going back to those rocketing back to the future, you know. In the old Hawaiians, they had a pretty good idea of quotas and limits and seasons and all of that stuff. Right, right. Isn't that what this is?
Yeah.
Respecting nature.
Respecting nature. Yeah, you know, the old style was you harvest the abundance and you conserve the scarcity, right? Mm-hmm. And everything is seasonal.
Sounds so simple, huh?
Yeah. Everything is seasonal and things pulse through nature. And so if you harvest the abundance and you conserve the scarcity, you can have a better, more abundance.
You know, Craig, when it comes time to Charlie, obviously be a native practitioner, not all of us are native practitioners, but some of us kind of figure that out as we come along. And I guess maybe your island, in some respects, the Big Island, is the best proving ground for a lot of these things that we're talking about. For instance, what Charlie was talking about in, you know, take the abundance and preserve the scarcity. You know, that is, doesn't that sort of fold into your other hat, the statistical end of things?
It does, and it can fold in a way that if you're going to respect nature and you're going to respect your place in it, you're always thinking about the condition of the resource. And a lot of fishermen do that. Obviously, the Hawaiians did, and they did it very successfully because they sustained a larger population on the Big Island, primarily with fish for protein, back in the before the Europeans came, than we have now.
I wonder, you know, because the Big Island's the newest, right? I wonder how many people once lived on the Big Island, Charlie. I don't know if there's anything data-wise, but we know there was about 1 million Hawaiians throughout the state,
right,
which
right.
is really kind of what we got now.
It's kind of what you know? We got now.
So there were a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think they were more evenly distributed mm-hmm. on the islands. The earliest settlements in Hawaii come from the Big Island, mm-hmm. you know, come from South Point that we know of. I mean, there may be others, but and you know, they populated the islands, and I think what happens if you live that way, so close to nature and dependent on the abundance of nature, then you're going to kind of distribute your population over time evenly, what the resource of each island can support.
Well, I mean, you know, now we got cars and we got you know, we got conveniences, planes. But it used to be that if you were hungry, you needed to kind of be near the food.
Yeah.
You know, you can't live up Mauka and eat Makai, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, in other words, getting through this, parsing through this list, we're looking at number one is respect nature. Number two is to seek the advice of experts. That's right up your pipe.
Yeah. You know, there's a long, in Hawaii, for Native Hawaiians, there's a long tradition of how we deal with nature. There's deal with being out on the ocean and everything. We're kind of losing that in the modern times, but I think we can go back to it. And if you seek the advice of experts, they can tell you what or what not to do. And you got to seek the advice.
Yeah, and you know, I looked at it not as much as lecturing.
Right.
But as passing information along.
Passing information.
You know? And that's kind of great. That's why I keep going back to your gig as the statistical guy. Where would you be if people weren't seeking advice and turning around and saying, okay, I'll report this, and then you guys digest it and find out what we can do, and then I'm now going to come and get advice from you on, okay, when can I fish for what?
Yeah, that's this long process mm-hmm. of getting community feedback, community input. Fortunately, there are a couple of fishermen on the science committee.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll put myself in that group
who
kind of know the fishery. And at the Fishers Forum and in other council things through the advisory panels, et cetera, you do get fishermen's input.
Yeah, well, that's what we talk about being bottom up. Last week was a prima facie example of how this thing process works.
Yeah. And this notion of generational knowledge, it means respecting the older people with mm-hmm. more experience and learning from them. And there are other ethnic groups that have some of that, but the basis really in terms of the values that we need are in the Hawaiian community.
And that being said, here we go. That number one was respect nature. Number two, seek advice. This is of the ones before and the ones with the information that you need. And number three, show regard to spawning and seasons. Okay, both of you can get in on this one. Charlie, what you mentioned was, there were certain places, certain islands, when certain fish were kapu except for royalty.
Right.
And some things were seasonal and really, really adhered to.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, the R months, as we know on the mainland, the R months are okay for lobster. If there's no R, there's no, you know. But those things were sort of, I think, almost indigenously inherent. I mean, you know, you got the message and you live by it because, and you didn't question it.
Yeah, yeah. well, showing regard for the spawning and seasons, you really, it goes right back to the first one, right? Respect nature. Because you need your the stock, the fish that you're catching, the fish that you're harvesting to spawn and sustain itself.
But see, if you just get right off the airplane, you have no idea.
Right.
You're going to grab a pole and go out there, kind of fish is that and when does it spawn? I don't know. You know, and that's what this statistical gathering that we talk about with Craig is all about, because that shows you. So once again, this folds in, Craig, to exactly what we're talking about here. Yeah. You got to take that information, and you got to make sure you follow its guidelines. Yeah.
And I'd like to make the point that, you know, fishermen spend a lot more time watching the rocks, watching the waves, being on the water than a lot of biologists.
Oh, yeah.
And the good biologists, in my view, and I work with them, I'm an anthropologist, but I work with biologists. The good biologists listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are insecure are a little defensive.
Yeah.
And that knowledge is there, and you can test it scientifically with your fancy hypotheses and prove it much of the time.
Yeah, put your doctor hat on for just a second in that area and say, okay, Dr. Severance, I've come to learn that this fish is spawning now, but is it okay to take it at all? Or you know, when do we know that the spawning season is over, and who do we rely on?
And one of the issues is the spawning seasons may well be different from one island to another.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
A That's a local claim that probably is quite credible. It depends on the condition of the stock and the nature of the spawning, but you can change the fish's behavior when you harvest it heavily during the spawning season. And if in your harvesting it's the larger females that are more vulnerable and you take more of them, it has an impact on the stock's ability to replenish itself for future generations.
That's the slippery slide that we're trying to prevent here. And hopefully, in some cases, Charlie, that we've not only come to learn this thing, but actually sort of practice a little bit. Because the next one in this 9-point code of conduct is do not waste. The best way to teach that one is when somebody's a kid, right?
Yeah.
How many manini are you going to really eat? Now, if you can catch plenty, that's nice. Yeah. But if they're not going to get eaten, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you know, I did this thing with my kid, too. They caught these little holy, and I said, you throw them back when you're done playing with them. Mm-hmm. They're still alive. And they died. So I made them cook these little cabbage holy and made them eat them.
Yeah.
But that was to prove the point. You don't waste. Yeah.
You know, I don't know that if anybody back in the day ever released fish. I think that when they went fishing, they went to get food. And now that's not the case with a lot of us. A lot of us have a humbug day at the office, and you want to just go out and whip a little bit, you know, and relax. And if you catch a nice 2-pound papillo, hey, come back tomorrow and catch it, or the next year when it's 3 pounds.
Yeah,
that's with regards to the waste. Big problem with that, though, don't you think that there are some groups, whole slices of the society that don't know about that, and they tend to, I don't want to say eat plenty, because that's not wasting, that's eating, but when you don't eat them or you don't do something, well, that's a problem.
That shouldn't happen. We shouldn't be killing fish just for the sake of killing fish.
And that's happened recently in a couple of tournaments where people have gotten really excited. And they've brought in ahi left on deck because they ran out of ice.
Yeah.
And those fish were inedible. That's a waste.
That's such a waste. And I do know that there's been a big shift on your island. A lot of the skippers now really are releasing a lot more fish, especially billfish, than ever before. And that, you know, it's not to say that they can't get a buck or $2 or $3 a pound, but they realize the value of the resource is bigger than the dollars for that day. I don't know if that's true or not, but I hope it is.
With a number of the Kona captains fishing out of Honokahau, that is clearly true. And the good ones can tell by the condition of the marlin whether it's likely to live or not. What we don't know scientifically is whether you release fish willy-nilly, how many of them survive.
There's also the argument, wait a minute. What's the breeders? What are the sides that have the babies? Are the big ones pall breeding? If so, we had better take them out of the water. If the little ones are not breeding yet, we got to let them go. And the ones in the middle that are breeding, we shouldn't take them either. Then what do we do?
Yeah.
That's it's a dilemma, case, right?
Yeah, we try to deal with that in different ways. But I think every species is different. You know, you have moi where when they're small, they're all male.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get big to the full moi size, they're female. right? So you have all of these males running around, and then the females are the largest size. We always like to take the largest size.
Of course.
But if we take the all the large females, then what's going to happen to our spawning stock, right?
Yeah, and that's, by the way, is one of the things that a lot of people learned at the forum last week, and that was the Kumu and the Uhu and stuff have definite sizes that you got to be watching. Now, this next one, in this 9-point code of conduct that we're talking about, is keep safe. Now, I don't know quite why that's in there. So, you know, since you guys put it together, why is that in there? What does it mean?
What it means is we want people to enjoy the resource and not get injured, not get hurt while mm-hmm. they're out fishing or diving. So keep safe. Take the advice of the people that are there. If they say don't go in the ocean, it'd be a good idea not to go in the ocean.
Hey, I'll tell you another one. You talk about being safe. If you are a skin diver and you're anywhere near where there's boats, you better be pulling something, because there's a lot of boats and they're running over a lot of people. And if they had a flag or a float, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And we're still working on that. Yeah. You know, how do you separate the swimmers and the divers from the jet skis and the boats? Yeah.
Remember that song, O'Pihi Man?
Yeah.
You know, don't turn your back on the, because you're going to go down, you know? Yeah. I'm not sure. Here on Oahu, we got a traffic jam everywhere, Craig, but there must be similar situations there. I'd ask you the same question. Why do you think that keep safe got interjected right in the middle of this code?
I think it also means it's not just safety for yourself, but it's safety for others. Mm-hmm. And it means treating other people who are fishing near you respectfully, not crowding in on them, and especially not pushing a troll boat into a bunch of Palawahi guys who are drifting on their chutes. And we've seen that happen. But it also means respect for the property and fishing gear of other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, speaking about that troll thing, it's also really obnoxious if you get too close to the stern of a boat that's pulling lines. Because some of us, we tend to have that center rigger way behind the boat. Yeah. And you say, what's that little splashing? Duh, it's my lure. Okay, so that's sort of the middle of this group of nine. Keep safe. Next is obey fishing laws and rules. And it is with great pride, I know that the council is a body that is really giving a lot of input, like bottom up we're talking about, into what these laws and rules are. So therefore, they're important.
Yeah, and we hope that these laws are good. The regulations are good. They're based on science. They're based on what we know from the communities that are there. And we want to make fishing laws that allow everyone the same opportunity to fish and to be in the ocean, to enjoy our resources that we have here.
You know, that being said, and Craig, back on the Big Island, going back to this thing, which I talked earlier about how they were looking at the tropical fishery on the Kona Coast.
Yeah.
And that, is it sustainable? And are there rules and laws? And if there are, if you follow them, we should have a continued value out of the resource.
Yeah, they have the special fishery management areas mm-hmm. that are like a marine protected area. They seem to be working. It seems to vary a bit from species to species,
sure.
but it certainly looks sustainable. But I want to make another comment on these fishing laws and rules, because this code is also for the other parts of the council region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very important, by the way.
Yeah.
And talk about that. Apparently, we can learn some lessons from them, because they're a little stricter than we are, and they're less forgiving if you do something wrong.
Well, especially in Samoa. Where,
exactly, yeah.
Where if you violate a village chief...
you better get out of town.
You can be fined.
Yep.
You can be punished. And they do have village special management areas now, and that seems to be working. But they all of them have these set of rules, and some of them, like here in Hawaii, are written in very great detail with special rules for special places. And the booklet is not always that easy to read.
Yeah. From what I understand, you quite often in some of these areas have to request and receive permission. I mean, you know, you can't just, because you're in a boat, can't go over there and catch some fish without saying, am I allowed to fish over here?
Yeah, that's correct for American Samoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to a lesser degree in some parts of Saipan and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas.
Yeah, so that's why this code, by the way, is not just for those of you on this island or wherever you may be listening. It's pretty much Pacific-wide.
Yeah, and to talk about that, we're translating the code into other languages right now for our island people. So we have the code has been translated into Chamorro, Chuckese, Marshallese, so that we can kind of hit off, you know, at the at the front. We said we addressed, we talked about conflicts, kind of hit off that conflict to get so that there's a code of conduct written in their language to make it easier to understand. And I think one of the things that we learned in trying to translate is some of this stuff doesn't translate.
I was going to say, is it I don't know if it's apples to apples and oranges to oranges.
Yeah,
in some cultures, things are they just look at things differently than we do.
Yeah.
That's why this next one is important. Proper gear and techniques. I don't know how many times we've tried to emphasize that on different parts of this show, but my goodness, if you're using the wrong gear, you end up with unintended consequences, and that's they're not acceptable. Expand on that a little bit, both of you. First of all, you, Charlie.
I think, well, one of the most extreme example that you can think of is, well, we don't allow dynamiting or poisoning, right? And even
or Clorox, you know, or chlorine,
and
or
even
whatever
in traditional culture, there was techniques to poison, using plant material. So that's a gear that we don't allow now, and the proper gear ensures that there's a safe experience for you, and it helps to conserve that stock of fish that you're fishing on. So use the proper gear. It's been tested. It's best for that species that you're trying to harvest.
You know, maybe, Craig, we talk about that. I talk more and more people are releasing fish on the Big Island, especially the charter guys. And I do know that the restrictions on the longline fleet and their type of gear is really, really monitored. And it seems like maybe we're heading at that into the general public. We need to start checking the way people are fishing, not just what they're catching.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
The longline restrictions are very specific in what you can and cannot have on board, and certain types of hooks or certain types of terminal tackle. If they're not used right, you might be leaving pieces of them on the bottom. You might be injuring fish that you can't land, which is a waste in and of itself. So it really means an understanding of acceptable gear, and there are things in the rules. And those rules will vary from area to area.
I kind of like this initiative right now, this effort to use barbless hooks for hook and line fishing. I think that works really good. Your hook doesn't get stuck in the animal with the barb.
Because you have a decision to make. When we bring that fish up, whether it's on shore or in a boat, we have a decision to make. Right. Is this a keeper? Yeah. Am I going to let this guy go? Yeah. And how easy will it be, depending on the gear I'm using? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's one that I really think is important. One of my pet peeves is people that roll up the boat ramps in the middle of the night with home rubbish, and they put them in the dumpsters that are there for the boats. And one of my pet likes is, I really, really, really like it when I see guys come in, and I'm a troller and a trailer guy. I really, really like it when I see somebody with a bag of Opala and throw it in that dumpster, so long as somebody's carpet's not in there. Okay, this next one, it sounds like almost, you know, finish your vegetables and pick up your trash.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, seriously, we have a real issue with this, you know.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have that big patch of plastic out in the Pacific.
Oh, it's an island.
Yeah. And then it's not good for the environment. It's not good for the fish. And it just makes good sense.
Yep.
I mean, we're going to get rid of plastic bags in the next couple months, right, on Oahu.
One baby steps at a time, right?
One baby steps at a time, but I mean, that's a good, live your life by that. Pick up your trash. Don't leave a trail of trash behind you.
Yeah, I can remember, and I hate to admit this, but I came from a generation when you changed your boat battery, you threw the old one in the water, and put the new one in the boat. Yeah. You know, I mean, if we'd only known back then what a jam up we were doing. Craig, you know, we have on Oahu and even on Maui, we have a lot we can learn from the Big Island. It's so big, it's so huge, and it's so pristine in so many areas because there's fewer of us there. But this has got to be an awfully big issue there, too.
Yeah, it is. And we already have a plastic bag being
banned. Yeah, you started.
Think about the experience of shore fishing and wanting to be peaceful and going to a place and having somebody else's trash there.
Yeah. I really love these guys that take away more from the beach than they bring.
And you would be amazed at the volume of stuff that is there from beach cleanups. And it's not always stuff that drifted in from the ocean. Sometimes it's stuff that people have just left there because they stopped by the beach and had their picnic and left. And some of that stuff, when it gets in the ocean, does do a lot of damage to the reefs and to the small reef fish.
Yeah, and that means the fishery. I mean, you start getting involved with the food chain with rubbish. Okay, now, that's the first eight. Number nine, it's like the 12 days of Christmas, to me, is the most important of all. And I do know that when I was a kid, there were people in our neighborhood that relied on us for fish.
Right.
And we relied on them for pudding or whatever. Yeah. So we shared our catch. And I think this is a simple way to end this conversation on this code today, is number nine. And, you know, number one was respect nature. Number two is share it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Did the old Hawaiians even have the opportunity not to share? Wasn't it sort of mandatory?
You know, I don't know if it was mandatory. I mean,
there was expected. Let's put it that way. Yeah,
it was expected. Yeah, that you would share your good fortune, right? And that's what it's about: sharing your good fortune, sharing your knowledge.
Before we knew that it would maybe not straight and ethical, and I can say this now because he's left the planet. Our dear friend Dr. George Mills, when he was running for the state senate out in Punalu, we used to go fishing out there. And we come in from fishing and go all over the neighborhood giving some, here's some fish for Uncle George. It just so happens that he was running for office and that really didn't have anything to do with it. But I then was when we had the opportunity. And Craig, I know people on the Big Island are this way. Yeah. That's when we had the opportunity to catch more than we could consume because we knew we were going to share it.
Yeah.
You know, it's different than we're just catching it because we could.
Yeah. And this is a value that is specific wide. It's very strong and expected in places like American Samoa and Guam and CNMI. And
Explain, give us an example on how that sharing might happen. If I'm a fisherman, my son and I get out early in the morning, we leave at 8 o'clock, we come back in at noon, I'm not going to be able to go down to market and sell my fish, but I'm going to do something with them.
Yeah, you think about the people you care about. Mm-hmm. And this can be family, it can be friends, it can be even be people that you don't know that well, but you're expressing generosity. And you're actually creating a kind of a social tie and social bond with them. And it's that sharing that brings people together. And here in Hawaii, what seems to be remarkable about it from an anthropological perspective is it really crosses ethnic groups.
Yeah.
And it brings ethnic groups, people from different ethnic groups together.
Yeah, and I like that. I like that. Of all these rules, that to me is the one that comes kind of naturally. I don't know if I'm an automatic sharer, but... the only thing that I don't like, and you can answer this, but Craig can answer this too. When you call up a friend, you say, hey, we just went fishing, got some mai mai. And they say, I got some mai mai for you. And they say, is it cleaned? are there any bones? You know? Well, wait a minute, brother. Come over here, bring your knife, take a chunk, and get out of my face. You know?
But, you know, in Samoa, with the sharing tradition, they also had a way to divide the catch.
Uh-huh.
That was traditional. And I would guess probably in Hawaii they did too.
I would think so. I do know that in restaurants, there are some rules. The guy washing the dishes gets a share of the tip of the guy, the fancy guy that's off the tomato D. Yeah. There's some kind of a system of rules in there. And I think that probably happened in old Hawaii. It'd be nice to be able to get back to
that. That's like their own little set of code of conduct there in the restaurant.
If people want to know about this code of conduct from the council, what do they do?
You can go to the council website. We have that available.
WPCouncil.org. Nutset.org.
Under the education tab on there. If you want, we have little pamphlets, little handheld kind of bills.
If you have the opportunity to speak to a group of people that are recreational fishermen or even semi-commercial fishermen or just plain fish consumers, you can get a stack of these from the council. And, boy, if you put one of these things in a kid's hand, Craig, it's a home run, isn't it?
Yeah.
Give somebody some rules.
Start with the kids and then do a little monitoring. Take a kid fishing.
Yep.
And then while they're out there, remind them of these things because they're the next generation. And for us to have fish forever for the next generation, it's not just us who have to care, but it's them who have to learn to care.
What's that line? Why don't you jump in and end me this? Give a man a fish.
And you feed him for a day.
Yeah. Teach a man to fish.
You feed him for his life.
There you go. Hey, thanks so much for being here, both of you guys. Dr. Craig Severance from the Big Island and Charlie Ka'ai'ai from right here on Oahu. Hope you learned a little something. If you want to know more about this Fisherman's Code of Conduct, it's pretty simple. Go to WPCouncil.org, WPCouncil.org, and then do what I did. You can look under education, but just there's a search box. Go search it. And if you want to hear something on the program, it's pretty easy. Send me an email, themikebuckshow@aol.com. The Mike Buck Show at AOL.com. So whether you're listening on Saturday afternoons or Sunday mornings, we hope you've had a good time. We hope you come back and tell others about going fishing. I'm your Captain Mike Buck. See you next time. Aloha.